Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to Just Films and That. This is the podcast that celebrates films we reckon might be underrated or underseen. I'm your host for this week, Alice Oliver, and this week we're completely chucking the format out the window because we're celebrating our 200th episode. So let's see what special thing we've got for you this week. So then, Josh, as I said, this week is our 200th episode.
It is. Caught it is blimey. It's a lot.
How's that happened?
That's twice as many as 100.
It is. It is. Yes, that's good. That's quick maths.
It's been a long slog, hasn't it, Alice?
a joyous, wonderful, lovely slog. Yeah.
Well, thanks for sticking with us, everybody.
Thank you so much. 200 episodes. So, as we did with our, was it our 100th episode?
It was your 100th episode. We did a retrospective of our first 100, but 200 is twice as many, and it would take us the amount of an episode just to read them out. Plus, we've just done our review of 2023. So, we're doing something similar to your 100th episode.
Yes, where you allowed me the time and space to talk about my favourite film ever, Terminator 2. So it was only right to bring that to you and let you talk about one of your favourite films of all time. And if it happens to be underrated or underseen, great.
It happens to be.
But that is not the main motivation
for
this,
is it? Not what
we're
about this week.
This is self-indulgent nonsense.
It is self-indulgent bollocks, which is...
Get ready for that.
What it normally is, but this week it's just not wrapped up in the format.
No, exactly. So what film did you choose then, Josh? And tell us a bit about why.
This was really, really difficult to pick. You basically said to me, pick your favourite film. And it's so when you like films, it's really hard. It's like favorite food, isn't it? You know, or favorite song or whatever. So we've done a lot of films that I would class as in my top 10 or what you want to call it. Like I love Pride. Mm-hmm. I love American Psycho. I love Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which we did before Your Good Self came on board back in the day. But I have picked Batman Begins from 2005. I've picked this because I love it and I just want to talk about it. I also think it's a bit... There's a few things. I think, first of all, it's a bit overshadowed by The Dark Knight because The Dark Knight was so wildly successful. And so, I mean, this was influential, but The Dark Knight took that to a whole other level in terms of the Batman Begins very much influenced origin stories and other superhero stuff as well. The Dark Knight, I mean, it changed the game in a lot of ways in terms of narrative structure and stuff like that. I believe it did anyway.
And I believe Batman Begins walked so the Dark Knight could run, right?
Indeed. And I don't like this online narrative that's cropped up that to like the Dark Knight is basic. You know, I think there is a touch thing of like, you know, it's like saying The Godfather's your favourite film or The Shawshank Redemption's your favourite film. You like what you like, right? So
you
I
like
haven't picked The
like?
Dark Knight. I thought about picking The Dark Knight, but I thought there's been that many people who've spoken about it over the years. I'm not sure that I'd need to pick it. It's also an element of it's so close to my heart, The Dark Knight, that I don't even know if I want to talk about it in anything other than a private capacity, because that film means a lot to me because it was so informative in the age I was. I saw it, went to see it on my own opening night. You know that to give you an idea. Yeah. But Batman Begins, you know, this is what this pod's all about. You like what you like. And I wanted to take the opportunity to talk about Batman Begins because I think it doesn't get as much credit because it's slightly overshadowed by its larger, more successful brother. It's the Phil Neville of Batman films, or the not the Liam Hemsworth, the other Hemsworth,
the other Hemsworth, the third the Hemsworth, one. The fella. He's in Westworld. I know that.
Yeah, and he's in. he plays his own brother in one of the Thor films. I think
he does.
Is he called?
He?
I want to say, is he called Luke Hemsworth?
I don't, mate. I don't know. Yeah. I'm not confident enough to say.
This is the other Hemsworth. Of Batman films. Oh, that. Essentially, I picked it because I want to talk about it, but I do think there's probably a shout in there that it deserves more appreciation, not with the scores, but certainly with when comparing it to the wider narrative around how influential it was. In terms of what it's about, it's Batman Begins. That's what it's about. It's the start of Batman, how he became Batman, and his early sort of time as Batman leading up to... it's him training to be Batman and dealing with his first big incident in Gotham as Batman, which is largely related to him. so that's the plot. So I'm guessing you have you seen this before?
Would you be surprised if I hadn't? Or
no, I think because of our age, I think it'd be. I know you haven't seen a lot of films, but I think you'd be hard-pressed to have avoided this in The Dark Knight. But I don't know. It wouldn't massively shock me, but I'd be a bit surprised.
I have seen it. Of the three of them, this is probably the one that I've seen the least. The other two, I feel like I've watched several times. And actually,
Sin Rises in The Dark Knight.
Yes, well, there was a long period of time there as well where I very passionately argued that The Dark Knight Rises was actually the best of the three.
Wow,
right?
that's a take, Alice.
I know, right,
that's
I know. But I do have to say that I know that a huge part of that is because it's the only one I saw in the cinema and it is the first film that I saw in IMAX. Mm. So it was just... I could not believe what I was seeing.
Like an overstimulated child has had too much sugar.
That's exactly it.
Sit down and just have a glass of water and calm down for a minute.
That was it, though. That was absolutely it. It was a real, cinematic moment for me. I was literally on the edge of my seat all the way through. And it is just a shame that the ending is so goddamn awful. I can't really argue for that.
We could talk and talk and talk about The Dark Knight Rises. And it's got good points and it's certainly got flaws as well. But anyway, we're talking about Batman Begins, aren't we?
Talking about Batman Begins, but yes. So I had seen it before. And as far as I was concerned, I'm a fan.
Yeah,
I'm a fan.
Oh, good.
Christian Bale is my favourite Batman because Christian Bale is just one of my favourite actors of all time. And me and Ollie, when we were watching this, we were talking about all the ways in which Christian Bale is amazing. And so much of it is to do with his eyes and his conviction and just how everything he does, I fully believe that he becomes that character. And Ollie raised a good point where with a lot of actors, you look at them and you look at their eyes when they're delivering their lines and when they're performing, and they just kind of look like they're trying to remember the script.
Yes.
And I just don't get that with Christian Bale at all. So he's my favourite Batman. So I was really excited when you picked this because obviously never watched it with that critical eye. And I was just intrigued to see what I would discover.
Indeed.
But Josh, tell us. Let's get into it. What are some of your favourite things about this film?
I mean, we could talk and talk and talk, but let's try and keep it under an hour here, considering it's normally half an hour episodes. But it might be a little bit longer because it's a 200th episode and you can always listen to it.
It's a treat for you. It's a treat for us.
Yeah, you listen to it in two parts. That's fine. So there's a few things. Obviously, there's loads and loads of stuff like this. I've tried to boil it down into some sort of good, clear points. The main thing I want to say is, this is a Batman film, and this sounds really silly to say this, but as a Batman film and a film fan, I'll explain what I mean. It's about Batman, and it is an origin story that's done really, really well. So many films up to this point had been Batman films in which Batman was a passenger.
Okay.
There are so many Batman films where it's basically the villain and Batman's in it. Now, I have a real affection for the Tim Burton Batmans, and I have actually have a lot of affection for the Joel Schumacher Batmans as well. Although I know they're not perfect, I saw them at the right time that I was absolutely buzzing when little 7-year-old me saw Batman and Robin and all that, nipples and all. But they are about the villains. You know, the first one, it's Jack Nicholson's Joker with Michael Keaton's Batman in it. And that sort of goes. Whereas this, and there's even an argument, I would say, that does happen to some extent in the rest of the Nolan Batman trilogy. Whereas this, there is a villain, but it's about Bruce Wayne. It is about Batman, where he's come from, why he's doing it, what's it doing. It really did give Batman his bollocks back. That's sort of the way I see this film. And the sequels are a lot more thematic and villain focused, but this is, you know, it really is about him. Why is he doing what he's doing? Why has he chosen to do what he's doing? How does he get to being Batman? You know, so this is, you know, it's an origin story, and it's a shame. On one hand, it's a bit of a double-edged sword, because on one hand, the structure of this is so solid. It's so well written. It's so well constructed. You can see the beats. You can see all the Lego bricks building the house. And it's a problem, because what's come after it is so many bad origin stories. So many times it's like, well, we need to know how they get the thing, the other thing, the weapon, the clothes, the costume, Whereas this, it's like, okay, so why does he need armor? He needs armor because he's always jumping off buildings and getting shot at. Why does he need a cape? He needs a cape because one night he jumps from building to building and he absolutely decks it.
Whacks himself. And you know what else as well is, we also get to see, and, you know, within film logic, but fairly logical reasons about how he gets hold of the stuff as well.
Yeah, it's because he's got a massive company.
Yeah, but and he knows who to speak to. So it's Lucius Fox a lot of the time, Freeman, isn't it? And then and then he's got connections, and it's like, oh, I know where I can get this material. I can get this. I can get that. And I just love all that little bit of extra detail. It just makes the world feel so much more rich. And like you say, it's just, it's every sort of little thing is about constructing him sort of as his character. And it's like, well, how did that happen? All the sort of boring shit that maybe you don't really want to see in a superhero film. It's like, well, how did he get this? Where did that come from? Why has he done that? But you get all that in this, and I think it works really well.
It works so well. I know, how does he have the ability to appear, to disappear? But not only that, yes, it goes into all his gadgets and stuff, but it also explores him as a man, as a person. You know, so one thing they do really well in this is Alfred as a father figure. In other films, Alfred's there, and he is there to be his butler, but Alfred is sort of Batman's parents, right? In the comics, he can do everything, but he needs him. It's not just he's his servant. He would be useless without him. And that's what I really like in this bit. So they explore him as a person, like I say, why he does what he wants to do, how driven he is, how he gets there, the logistics of it and stuff like that. And they do that through this amazing sort of world creation. So, talking about the world creation, for me, you know, this was one of the first superhero films where, or comic book films, where it was like, oh, this feels like it was a real place. So they talk about how economically on its arse Gotham is and why that is. So I really, really like that. In terms of, like, you know, you know that when they talk about the Narrows, they don't go into it that much, but you know that's the bit where most of the crime and the poverty seems to be. So they literally have almost walled it off from the rest of the city, which is obviously making a point in and of itself. So love that. And yeah, like I say, they create Gotham, and this idea of the corruption that's allowed Gotham to sort of rot alongside it. Because again, alongside Batman, Batman's one of the comic characters that is so intrinsically linked to where it's set. Batman, yes, there are bigger adventures where he takes on aliens and all sorts, but he is Gotham's protector. That's what he is. That's his turf. To the point where in the comics, and I know, you know, we don't need to talk about the comics that much, but no one else goes there. Like, Superman might go there if he absolutely needs him. But if you go there, it'd be like, what the fuck are you doing here? It's my patch.
Yeah, my patch.
Do you know what I mean? Although equally, he doesn't go out in day, so I'm not really sure what happens there. but yeah, so I love the world creation, the cast as well. I mean, this may be the best cast comic book film of all time.
Wow. I love words.
Yeah, I mean, obviously The Dark Knight comes after it. Maybe Heath Ledger pips it because he's so amazing in that. But, you know, is there a character in this who you don't buy? Do you know what I mean? Michael Caine as Alfred, amazing. Christian Bale. We've never done a Christian Bale film on the podcast before. He's brilliant in this. We'll probably come back to him when you're doing your likes, because I imagine you've got a little bit to say about that. Morgan Freeman, Liam Neeson.
I feel like I had an idea that this would be the case anyway, but it was confirmed for me because as soon as we finished watching this, we watched The Dark Knight, basically, because I was like, oh, shit, we've got to watch The Dark Knight now. But I do prefer Maggie Gyllenhaal as Rachel. than Katie Holmes.
Yeah, and I would say both are good actors, but I'd say, yeah, Maggie Gyllenhaal is a stronger performer. And she, I mean, she does get more to do in The Dark Knight than Katie That's Holmes true. Gets in Batman Begins. But
yeah.
I do think you're right there. I would agree. I prefer Maggie Gyllenhaal. That's probably the only one that's not as strong. But then you've got, you know, Gary Oldman absolutely smashes it. Michael Caine, Morgan Freeman, Rutger Hauer, Cillian Murphy, Liam Neeson.
Cillian, man. And so, obviously, because of Oppenheimer so recently, I was like, it was just so weird. I know this sounds crazy, but it was weird to see him so young. Like, because yeah. I don't know why. I don't know if I've always just pictured him as a man in his late 40s or whatever. But he came on screen and I was like, oh, shit. Like, he looks so different.
And he's not got those sharper cheekbones that he's got in Oppenheimer. He's
because he lost so much weight.
More, a little bit more baby face.
But he was
also
great as well.
Auditioned for Batman. So if you go on YouTube, you can see his audition.
Oh, you can watch it.
So it's on YouTube. And you can see, look, he's a brilliant actor, but you can see why. Great. He's got that arch edge, that sort of villainous energy. It's like, he may well be another superhero, but he ain't Batman.
No, he's not. He doesn't convey billionaire playboy
in
the same way that I think a Christian Bale could do. But as a villain and as Scarecrow especially, excellent.
Yeah, he's absolutely brilliant in this. So really love that. And I do as well want to give a little shout out to the late Tom Wilkinson, who I think has possibly one of the most impactful but small roles in a comic book film. So he plays Carman Falcone, sadly passed away just after between Christmas and New Year in 2023. Mm. One of the most sort of finest actors I think this country's ever produced. He's brilliant in this. He's great in everything he's been in, whether it's the full Monty or this or anything else he's been in. He's been in loads and loads of stuff. But, you know, his sort of, he's probably got 10 minutes of screen time if you add it all up, but he just smashed every scene he's in. I can't, particularly the scene where he has the conversation with Bruce Wayne about privilege. It's just like, but that sort of stuff, I think something you've got to bear in mind when you look at this film now that we're so spoilt for choices, that the richness of the world in this and the thematic exploration that it goes into, I don't remember ever seeing the likes of it. You know, if you look at the Superman films, the Christopher Reeve Superman films, and the Batman films, and the odd one we got before that were great, but they're primarily spectacle based. And like, look, you're going to believe a man can fly, or you're going to actually see Batman, or you're going to see Blade, or whoever it was. Whereas this went, comic books are modern mythology, so let's make it that. And that's sort of what it is in terms of the explanation of themes. So that idea of no one's ever actually said about Batman, you think you have nothing to lose. You haven't thought your life through, you idiot.
Yeah.
Basically. And he gives him this massive dressing down. And that almost is what makes him go and become Batman. Because he gets kicked out and it's like something clicks then. And it's like, right, he's actually right there. So I've lived in privilege my whole life. So I'm going to go and not do that. And stuff like that. So that's, you know, that's mainly what I like. There's loads and loads of like it, and I'll probably be jabbering on, you know, once you've said your likes. But let's hear what you've got to say. What do you like about this film? Having looked at it particularly as well with that critical eye, did it improve it for you? What do you like about it? Let's hear it.
So a lot of the things I like are just sort of building on what you've already said, to be honest. But like, I really like the story in this. I'm really into this version of Batman and all the different elements that go into creating creating this vibe that's around him. So like the sound and the aesthetic and the action sequences, the little plot points that sort of give you an idea of the sort of person that Bruce Wayne is. So that moment when he takes a gun in broad daylight to go and shoot the man who killed his parents and he just misses out by not being able to do it because someone else gets there first.
Yeah.
I really loved that moment, and I feel like it conveys so much and also helps to enhance his character development throughout the film and then ultimately the whole trilogy. It reminds me of the moment in Bruges where he's got the gun to his temple, Gleason is behind him, right? He's coming to shoot him, isn't he? But then Colin Farrell brings the gun up to his temple and he's like, no, it's just like that weird, it's like a funny little unexpected kind of misdirection sort of thing where your heart is sort of in your throat expecting one thing to happen and then the other thing happens.
Yeah.
And I just thought that was a really great moment and I think says a lot about him and then ultimately gives a lot of weight to the sort of man he eventually becomes as well. I do particularly like the aesthetic at the beginning of this film as well. So when he's in Bhutan, I think it is. So I really enjoy like the scenery and the costume and the colour scheme. Everything feels really dramatic and I think it offers a really strong start to the film. Mm. And I think this was just it was a really impactful way of opening it. Like you think, oh, we're going to be in Gotham. He's going to be doing, you know, Bruce Wayne-y type stuff. And it's like, oh no, we're sort of in the mountains. He's in a prison. And then suddenly he's in this like dojo? Is that what they call it?
They basically just take him to the headquarters of the League of Shadows, don't they?
Yeah,
so it's sort of, I don't know if it's a house or it's probably got a more like an appropriate name for that area of the world, but it's like a castle, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So I thought a really great start and again, just sort of really enhances the viewing experience and how you engage with that world as well. So we've touched on the performances already. I've got a whole paragraph written here, Josh, just about how much I love Christian Bale and how amazing I think he is.
Well, it's the first one we've done of Christian Bale's, isn't it? So since this is the first Christian Bale film we've done. Let's hear what you think about Christian Bale. You know, this is very much buff Bale. There's fat Bale, there's thin Bale, there's normal Bale.
Yeah.
So tell me about buff Bale.
So honestly, a lot of it is what I've already said sort of earlier on, but he's so convincing to me. Like in anything I watch him in, I just believe it. I believe that he has delved into that role. I believe that he appears to be one of the hardest working people in Hollywood,
obviously,
that we can see visually.
Yeah.
You know, not just
as an actor, as a star. Yeah.
His performance, his dedication, obviously the weight loss, the weight gain. And I think for this, he had to gain like 100 pounds within a couple of months.
He'd just done The Machinist, which is the one where he's famously really, really thin.
Yeah.
And he gained something like 100 pounds to the point where I think he put on too much weight.
Yeah.
So all the crew were calling him Fat Man.
Oh God!
Obviously, in a jokey way, not in a horrible way. But I mean, he's stacked in this film. He's done a lot of training for this film. Something I think is worth saying about his performance in this and this film in general as well is there is also that little glint of humor, which I think is in The Dark Knight, but I don't think it is in The Dark Knight Rises. I think one of the problems I have with the third one is the humor goes, whereas in this, there is that little sort of glint in his eye and the little back and forth he has with Alfred and stuff like that, around, if it's not about thrill seeking, what's that damn good television and all that sort of stuff. And I think you forget that, you know, Christian Bale, he does have that. He can do anything. He's funny in American Psycho. He's funny in this. It's funny when you talk about that look in his eyes where it seems like he's actually inhabiting the character. When he did one of the films he did more recently, I think he did one for Netflix. I think it's called The Pale Blue Eye.
Yes, Edgar Allan Poe.
And I saw an interview with him when they asked him about his process. And obviously he's not one who seems to love that interview side of things. He's very guarded. He's not on social media or he is actually, I think he's on Twitter, but he sent one tweet about 10 years ago,
really,
but he's not active on social media. Mm. But.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
He said something about what he does is he maps out his character's thoughts. And I think he said something, you know, he basically almost learns the character's thoughts like a script. So if your character will be thinking this at this moment, that's almost like what he is trying to think as the character. So maybe that explains why that sort of there isn't that look in his eyes.
It's he just never seems to sort of drop out of it. Like sometimes you'll be watching a film, maybe with the less experienced actor or a less dedicated actor or whatever, and you can just sort of like you just see them. Like I love Keanu Reeves, right? But yeah. I see Keanu Reeves when I watch a Keanu Reeves film. With Christian Bale, I don't see Christian Bale. Yeah. Like I see the character, and it is just, it is such a wonderful skill. Has he ever won an Oscar? I don't think he has he?
I think he won for, I feel like he won for The Fighter.
Let's do a little bit of googling. Bring the facts to you here on Just Films.
Let's have
that.
A look. Yeah,
but yeah,
he's received various accolades, including an Academy Award.
Oh, he has.
I'm sure he won for The Fighter.
Right. Okay. Good. Well, I'm pleased. That makes me happy. I was worried then, but he's certainly deserving of it.
He's been nominated a lot.
Well, that's good to hear as well.
But I don't know what he. Let's have a look what he won for. Yes, it was The Fighter. He won Best Supporting Actor. I think it was for The Fighter.
Okay. Phew. I'm pleased. So sometimes
he's been nominated quite a bit as well.
Not that I like really care about the Oscars or the awards, and a lot of it is a sham. But sometimes, like when Margot Robbie didn't win for Barbie, I was a bit like, I'm annoyed now. Like, why am I annoyed? You know, they're still making bank. They don't care. Christian Bale, he's one of them. If he's in something, I'll watch it. Like,
yeah,
I watched
he's like a Mark
that.
Quality, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Just finally as well, I think the way that the film constructs and develops his relationships with the characters around him is very strong. So there's a lot of, like, prominent side characters in this. So if you think about sort of Alfred and Lucius and Rachel and the commissioner or who eventually becomes Commissioner Gordon, he's lieutenant at the time, isn't he?
Yeah.
And I just feel like in many films, it's sort of when you've got that many different sort of lines of narrative going on or those many different relationships going on, some of it can feel a bit forced or a bit like, oh, I didn't need that. Like, save me 10 minutes. I don't need that. But within this, they all felt authentic and they all felt necessary to the film, and they all felt engaging, which I thought was really interesting. Even the way he is with Liam Neeson's character, so Ra's al Ghul as well, it all just felt like it did not need it to be there, but it did enhance the quality of the film. And at no point was I like, oh, we're back to this guy now. Oh, we're back doing this thing again, which I would usually be in something like this, where you're trying to spread yourself so thin and spread your protagonist around. So it's like, oh, we need him here, we need him there, we need him, you know, having these conversations, etc. And it just didn't feel like that in this. So I don't know if that's something to do with the acting, the writing, the way that the story developed, or a combination of all three. But I thought it was really successful in that, and I think that's an area where it's really easy for a film to fall down. We'll move on now then to talking about anything that we didn't like about the film, or perhaps anything that we would change. And I feel like this is going to be one of them where you aren't going to bring anything genuine to the table, to be honest, and it's just going to be like these weird little nitpicky type bits that you've seen throughout the film. But go on, try and be balanced.
There's a few things, and it was just so hard. It was so hard to do because it's like punching the tooth fairy in the face. Do you know what I mean? It's like killing your childhood. So, I mean, I've got issues. There's two things I've nailed down with the film in terms of wider things. I do think, and this isn't an issue in this film, but it went on to become an issue, and I cannot see why it was never addressed, right? But his voice is stupid, right? The Batman voice.
The Batman voice.
But in this, it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole, where are the other drugs going? It makes sense. But in the other ones, I don't know why, but they just make it go sillier and sillier.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I don't mind it in this, but I do, that I don't like that it went on. You know, by the time it gets to the end, when he's kicking Bane and screaming at him, you never give us all our reasons, that bit. Mm. But Bane knows he's fucking Bruce Wayne. So he doesn't need to use the voice.
Mm-hmm.
So I like it in this bit, the bit where he first meets Gordon. He's like, you're just one man now, we're two. It doesn't seem as silly, and it just went on and on and got sillier. But that's something about the sequels. I've got two things that I'm not bothered about, and I've got one thing I'd change. What do you want to hear first?
Go with the two things you're not bothered about, and then tell me what you change.
So the two things I'm not bothered about in this, I'm not that bothered on the Batmobile. I've never been that bothered on the Tumbler. I get that it looks like a real car. I'm not bothered. In terms of the suspension of disbelief and setting Batman in the real world, I'm quite happy to suspend it enough that he still gets a Batmobile-looking Batmobile.
Mm-hmm.
Even in The Batman, it's sort of just a car.
Mm-hmm.
So my favourite Batmobile is still the Keaton one. And yeah, I know it looks stupid because it can't go around corners and stuff. But I don't know, there's just something gothic and comic booky I like about that, that I'm just not that bothered about. I don't mind the bike that he uses as it goes along, but I've just never been that bothered on the Tumbler. And I've always disliked that in this film, he uses a gun at one point.
Okay.
So there's a point where he fights the Scarecrow's men and he basically makes one of them shoot another one in the foot.
Mm-hmm.
But Batman, this is my interpretation of Batman, because obviously it's a comic book and he's been around so long and he's been written by so many people that really is what you make of it. Mm-hmm. So if you disagree with me, then you're fine. Then fine. Agree to disagree. But for me, Batman hates guns. He won't touch a gun. He'll take a gun off anyone. So I don't like that he does that, because I feel like he would always disarm someone first.
Okay.
And I know that is nitpicky, because, for example, one of the bits I like in The Dark Knight is when the Joker goes to his flat and he disappears to become Batman. Mm-hmm. One of Joker's goons says, "Heads up, pretty boy," and tries to hit him with a gun. And he takes it off and strips it straight away as if like it's nothing. And that's always something I've liked about Batman, is he hates guns. Even in the third one, he kicks a gun or punches a gun out of Catwoman's hands and says, "No guns, no killing." Because Batman does, now I know the whole Batman doesn't kill thing, right? Let's not get into that, because he probably does kill people. If he doesn't kill them physically, he kills them with the American health system by beating them half to death, and then and then their bills cripple them or whatever.
Yeah.
But for me, I've always thought he hates guns. Guns killed his parents, and guns are why he became Batman. So he would always take a gun off someone before he did anything.
Yeah.
So I've never liked that, but that is a nitpick. It's just one of those things. In terms of something I'd change, it's more to do with something I think's not been done in a Batman film yet, which is, it's been done, they tried to do it once, but they didn't do it properly and it just was stupid. Which is, if I was writing a Batman film, and God willing, someday I may well do. I won't, don't worry. Don't worry, Batman fans, you're safe. But I would focus more on his relationship with his mother.
Mm-hmm.
It's never really happened before. There's the whole Save Martha thing, but that's not focused on her mother. It's just pointing out that their mum has the same name.
Mm-hmm.
But I would always focus on, it's always been either his parents are fairly anonymous and you don't really see much of them, which is most of them, whereas in this they did go into it a bit more with his dad and stuff like that. But I always got my impression from the comics and other stuff was that his dad is a bit of a hard ass.
Mm-hmm.
And it's his mum that's the soft touch.
Mm.
I always think that, I mean, as an 8-year-old kid or whatever, seeing your parents get murdered would be traumatic. Mm. But I always think I would delve into that relationship with his mum if I was going to do it, and that doesn't do it. So that's just something I'd change. What about you? Is there anything? More Christian Bale.
More Christian Bale. Another hour, please, of Christian Bale. So I do find some of the dialogue really cheesy.
All right.
And some of the script I do think is quite basic. Like, there are times where I don't feel like there's a lot of nuance and that there are many conversations that are just exposition dumps for the audience as opposed to sounding like authentic conversations between the characters. And something that really highlighted this for me, and that, like I said earlier, is that we immediately watched The Dark Knight after watching this and you can really feel the difference in the sort of quality step up, if it were, and how sophisticated the script then becomes in that film, right? So obviously this is the first film of the trilogy, so I completely appreciate that you've got to lay the foundations for that trilogy to succeed, and that means being a bit obvious in the first film to make sure everyone is up to speed, everyone knows what's going on, who's who, what's this person up to, what's their motivation, etc. Because there's a chance you've got people who aren't traditionally superhero fans or Batman film fans coming to see this film because it just looks like a good action film and it's got a good cast, or they like Christopher Nolan, etc. So I get it, but there were times where it was just like...
I'm interested to know, can you think of like a particular bit?
I should have made notes as I was going, but it was just a lot of it more towards the beginning of the film, for sure, and it did get better as we went on. But it's all just kind of like, you know, my parents are dead and I'm sad about that. And Rachel has been my friend for years, but I love her as well. And it just felt a little bit like that at times. But I guess it was just some really sort of overt character establishment.
Right. Okay.
But I do understand why that was in there and why they felt the need to do that, just to bring everyone up to speed. And the other thing is, because there's only two things, is that I didn't love the flashback sequences where we see how Bruce got his fear of bats and then, you know, some of the stuff like around his parents. A lot of them felt really rushed and a little bit forced. And I actually feel like the sequences, especially the one at the very beginning, needed to be a bit longer, so we could sit with the characters a bit more. Not too dissimilar to what you were saying, actually, about exploring his relationship with his mum a little bit more, but just sitting with those characters for a bit longer. Like, when his parents get shot, I want to feel that. I want to feel that emotional trauma. And you don't really, because you don't spend enough time with them, I don't think.
It's so difficult to do, especially in a 12A. Because really, for someone to believe this guy would go and do what he does, it'd have to be brutal.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in every single one, it's either quite stylized, so you don't see it, or in this, they make a point of making it really quick.
Mm-hmm.
There's a really good trailer for one of the Arkham games that does his first sort of 25, 30 years in 3 seconds.
Wow.
So you see his face as a little boy, and you see the gun go off. And then you see his face in school and he's getting punched by a bully, and then he's Batman.
Yeah.
And it goes like, doo, doo, doo. And it's like, honestly, it's one of those things where I was like, fucking hell, that's Batman.
Yeah.
Like, it's like just properly hit home. Mm-hmm. But no, it is, it's difficult. It is. I know what you mean in that sense with the early stuff. But it's one of those things where I think you have to take it back to the time it was made and go, this is the first Batman film since Batman and Robin in 1997. So I think now I don't want to see another string of Martha Wayne's pearls fall to the floor. I don't want to see that guy shoot those two people again, which is what I was so happy when I went into the Batman and they didn't do any of that.
Mm-hmm.
They just went, he's been Batman for a year. You know why he's Batman. This is what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And, but at the time, I think that was vital that they had to do that.
Yeah. And
I think it was so important at the time.
Yeah. And I just think I would have liked a little bit more time with those characters.
With little Bruce.
To really, not that I don't care that his parents got shot in front of him, but I wanted the moment, I think, to have more impact.
Yeah.
And I think a little bit more time with them, if those scenes didn't feel so kind of rushed and a bit shoehorned in there. I suppose just take a bit more time. The film's already quite long, but, you know, to really craft those moments and try maybe a few more, I don't know what you could do, just try and elevate it a little bit in terms of sort of that audience engagement and the sophistication around like how it was written and how it's presented to the audience, because it just felt a little bit too It felt a bit too abstract, I think.
Yeah.
Like his relationship with them and what our relationship with them was meant to be as the viewers as well. So I wanted that moment to hit me in the gut and to be like, this is now why Batman exists, sort of thing. Mm. And I didn't really feel that. So.
Have you ever seen any of the animated series?
No, I haven't.
So there's an animated film I want to pick, which is called Batman Mask of Phantasm.
Okay.
Which is a bit like this, but it's set in the animated series from the early 90s with Kevin Conroy and Mark Hamill and all that. And there is a bit in that where he first puts the costume on and all you see is the back of the cowl and Alfred's face.
Mm.
And it's like Alfred shits himself.
Ooh.
And there's a bit where it's basically where I think he just says, good God. But he basically, it's something like, the whole point of the scene is, this is not the little boy I looked after. Yep. This is a damaged man who has been away and trained. And it's so good, Alice. Honestly, if you are interested, all of the Batman animated series is on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
And it is the benchmark for how to do Batman. It's incredible.
Interesting.
Incredible. It's so stylized as well. So it's all done Art Deco as if it's in the 30s.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's cool, yeah.
And it was made after the Burton Batman, but that's where Harley Quinn comes from. Harley Quinn's not from the comics. Mm. She was written for that series and stuff, so it is well worth a look. But if you want more about him becoming Batman, Batman Mask of Phantasm is, you get a whole new origin for the Joker that's not been done before. You get a whole new thing. But a lot of the stuff in this about like his first night of trying to be Batman and stuff like that, it does it first.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't do it. It does it differently. It's not better or worse, but the whole there's a whole bit where he like stops a truck robbery before he's got the costume, and he does this whole thing of being like, they need to be scared of me. They're not scared of me. Why are they not scared of me?
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like he chooses the bat moniker and he puts the cowl on, and Alfred just shows his face, and it's just like this man is a monster.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a guy. It's a thing, and that's one of the things I do like about this as well, as the whole, I've got to be a symbol.
Yeah.
Because as a man, I can't scare them. As a symbol, they'll shit themselves, basically.
Yeah.
But I do know what, back to your point, I do know what you mean. It does feel a little bit by the numbers with the parents stuff. I don't mind it, because I think looking at it in the context historically, they had to do it. They just had to.
Mm-hmm.
The last one we did was, the last film before this was some sort of, neon nightmare that wasn't for kids, but sort of was for kids, and wasn't for adults, but wasn't for adults. And it was an absolute mess. And this came along and went, you want a Batman film? I'll give you a Batman film.
Oh, he gave us a Batman film. So we probably aren't going to think that this is underrated, but it's always fun to look at the critical reception. And I don't actually know what it is. If I was going to hazard a guess, I mean, I think we're easily looking early to mid eights. Like,
yeah.
I reckon.
Good. It did well.
Yeah. I reckon this is probably getting like an 84 or an 8.4.
And would that be appropriate for you?
I think it's tricky because of what it started. I almost feel like I'd want to give it more because of what came later and, what was able to stand on the shoulders of this sort of thing and the impact of the trilogy as a whole as well. So I would maybe say that that's a tiny bit underrated, but like tiny bit. Go on. Give it? Are you giving this? Is this like in the nines?
Yes, it's like a 9 out of 10 for me. Yeah, it's high. It's almost, I think this is almost perfect.
Ooh,
I love this film, but a lot of that is just love for the character, love for the source material and what it did for the character. Okay, so at the time of recording, over on IMDb, it gets an absolutely disgraceful 8.2 out of 10. You can shove that right
low,
up their ass.
Low.
Listen, every single one of you that didn't vote it better on IMDb, drop us an email, filmsonthatpod@gmail.com. I'd like to have a little chat with you. And no, everyone's entitled to their own opinion. However, over on Rotten Tomatoes, it gets a little bit better. The critics, this is the critics as well, give it 85%.
Okay, yeah.
For a comic book film as well. I mean, that's big. And the audience give it a whopping and wholly appropriate 94%.
Wow. what?
Which I'm well on board with that, Alice. I'm well on board with 94%, which averages out to 87%. Now, I'm going to be bold here and say that I think this is a 9 out of 10 film. I think 87%, I think that's underrated.
Well, there you go. I mean, you've made your case for it. You've made your argument for it.
Big swing.
That is a big swing. I would say it's probably appropriately rated. I think that's really appropriate.
Well, we'll put it to a vote and see what everyone thinks. In terms of box office, listen, it was a big hit. Didn't make anywhere near as much as The Dark Knight, but I don't think we can say this is underseen. But yes, appropriately rated from Alice, underrated from me, and we'll put it to a vote out to you guys. What do you think?
And I just pulled up the box office then because I was intrigued when we started going into this. So it says that the budget was 100, not quite. So it says that the budget was 150 mil and that it made 373 mil. So over double.
Box office wise, if you think The Dark Knight did a billion.
Did it really? Oh,
so for a while, I want to say The Dark Knight was second only to Titanic.
So obviously these are just the immediate numbers that you find when you Google it. And you know what? The thing that we found with sort of trying to find these numbers is it's quite difficult to get sort of straight answer.
Box office mojo tends to be the best, but it's hard.
But yeah, looking at so just doing the same thing with The Dark Knight, 185 million budget and 1.6 billion at the box office.
I'm fairly certain for a while it was second only to Titanic.
Incredible.
And then Avatar came out, and then you get all the Marvel films and stuff like that. So it did beat Harry Potter. It beat Lord of the Rings. I might be wrong, but I'm fairly certain for a while, because Titanic did 1.8 until they re-released it, I think. And then this did 1.6. And I remember watching it crawl up, being like, come on, beat Titanic. Make a Batman film the highest grossing film of all time.
Imagine. But we can surely attest some of that success to Batman Begins.
Absolutely.
The fact that people have seen Batman Begins and then gone, holy shit. And if they've seen it after the fact, you know, on DVD, I suppose it would have been at that time.
Yeah.
And then going, well, I need to go and fucking see the second one when that comes out. Because that's big money. And if you think about the ratio there from budget to box office is incredible.
And if you think about those box office numbers, I thought it made about 500, 600 million. That's what I thought it did. If you look at that box office there, yeah, plenty of people have seen it now, but what did it make? 300-400 million. The MCU can release a film now that no one gives a shit about and it'll make that.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
So, this
is a Batman film. And normally, up until in a sort of pre-MCU world, no one was really competing with Batman at a box office. Maybe Spider-Man. Do you know what I mean? But even Spider-Man, the first three, the Raimi three, didn't do as well as the Nolan Batmans. So I'd say it's probably underseen at the time, but it's probably been seen by more people now, shall we say. Okay, so there we go. Episode 200 in the bag.
Wow.
Episode 201 coming your way. Alice, you're starting us off with the next 100.
Gosh.
201, what are we going to be talking about?
Well, I thought I would use this opportunity to steal the first listener suggestion of the year. We've had an email from listener Mark, and he thinks that we should take a look at a film called Go from 1999.
Yes,
so,
indeed.
Get ready for that one, listeners.
Indeed. It's the third in the trilogy. The first one's called Ready, and the second one's called Steady.
Nice. Good.
Thank you.
Good humor.
Great stuff, that. Might cut that, because dad jokes, guys. Anyway, listen, this is the end of our 200th episode. We will, of course, be back next week with Go, which is our first listener suggestion of 2024. However, it does remain to be saying thank you very much for sticking with us for 200 episodes. We will continue releasing, recording episodes, until you get bored of us or we can't do it anymore for whatever reason. But we do really appreciate you listening. Thank you to everyone who's helped us over the years, our guests, everyone who's ever been involved in the podcast. Thank you very, very much. We do really appreciate it. We're going to keep doing our thing and hope it keeps growing as it has done, Alice. So listen, social media, you know where we are, Just Films and that. email address, filmsinthatpod@gmail.com. And if you go in the episode links for this, the Patreon's link is there. If you fancy any extra stuff, it's all there for you. Episodes a day early, ad-free, and slightly extended as well. We're on the television as well, aren't we, Alice?
We are, yes. Every Friday evening from 6 p.m. you can find me and Josh talking about our favourite underrated and underseen films, and sometimes just films we want to talk about, like Batman Begins, which I'm sure will be coming very soon to the channel. But that's on your local TV network. We're on Channel 7 on Freeview. What that means, if you live in Birmingham, Bristol, Leeds, Liverpool, or the northeast of England, we're on Channel 7. Or if you live in northeast, or excuse me, if you live in North Wales or South Wales, see, the baby brain is coming out again. North Wales or South Wales, it's on Channel 8 on Freeview. And the videos are all going on Dailymotion. So head on over there, have a little look at what we're up to.
Yes.
Thank you.
Just Alice there forgetting the two parts of the country she is from. But we will see you next week. We're going to be doing our first listener suggestion. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you for supporting us. It's goodbye from me. Cheerio.
Bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.